And I finally make my way to that kid in the very back. And I remember getting to him and really seeing that something's seriously wrong here. I tickle his chin or his forehead, and he looks up at me, and his half of his face is paralyzed. And I said, "Everything's going to be all right, buddy." And he smiled at me and went unconscious. And we get him to this local hospital. That's just a small rural hospital. He's still unconscious. And that's when I get to see his body, and he is covered from head to toe with cuts and bruises, which we later learned was from an iPhone cord. He'd been beaten with an iPhone cord. Anyway, the doctors didn't think he was going to make it at that hospital. We loaded him in an ambulance and then gave him an escort over to Spokane. Anyway, they let us back in, and we get back to his room, and the nurse is crying. And she says he's not going to make it through the night. We're all heartbroken. We're all crying. So we showed up the next morning. Everybody's chipper, happy. And the nurse comes out, and Doc, and they're like, "Hey, he's made a complete turnaround." So we go to this meeting, and we learn that the detectives in Seattle had hit the house where this kid had been beaten. And we learned that he'd been living in a dog kennel.
Now, you guys have detectives also in the Idaho State Police, and that you and I just briefly touched on that earlier before we started recording. Is that a promotion, or how does that work out, and what are the difference in responsibilities?
Yeah, so it is a promotion, and each office is a little bit different. So about 10 years ago, I promoted to detective from Boise, and then I came up to Coeur d'Alene. So I made that seven-hour move up to Coeur d'Alene, and where I was, this office here is broken into two segments at the time. It was, you had your NARC unit, and then you had your major crime homicide death investigation unit. So when I came up here, I was on the NARC team, and I did that for almost 2 years.
But then you got promoted to sergeant.
Yep.
In there somewhere.
So
was that in the detectives?
Right before I hit my 2 year mark in NARCs, I got promoted to patrol sergeant. So then I went back to the road, spent 6 years back on the road as a patrol sergeant. And then in 2023, I took that voluntary demotion and came back to detectives, but I went to the major crimes unit. I'd been doing dope my whole career. I loved it. I still love it, but I wanted to learn some new things and kind of challenge myself, mm-hmm. challenge my mind, which definitely, that's been an eye opener for me, this new job. But, yeah, that's kind of how I've ended up where I'm at.
Once you become a narc, it's pretty addictive, just like cocaine or heroin.
Oh, it is. It's I mean, it
gets in your blood.
Yeah. And our office is awesome. I mean, we're a DEA task force office. So we've got two full-time DEA agents in our office. In fact, before I ever became a detective, I didn't even know what BIA was. We've got a Bureau of Indian Affairs agent in our office. We've got all the local task force officers in our office. We're a big, as far as Idaho standards, we're a big task force office, which has been an awesome experience. And our guys are really making impacts across the country. I mean, it's not rare for us to be buying dope straight from Mexico now. You know, the game's changed so much that, it's like a giant puzzle. It's also like whack-a-mole. You take one down and another one pops up. It doesn't matter how many you take down, which can be frustrating at times, but it's, again, job security. So,
yep. Just like we said at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're a uniformed trooper on road patrol, and let's say a murder happens, is that trooper going to catch that case?
No.
Or is that going to go to the detectives?
No. In fact, at most, he'll be securing the scene, the uniformed trooper, but they're going to call one of me or one of my three partners out for that investigation. And really, ISP and how it's designed is we are here to supplement the local agencies, especially in the investigative unit and the major crimes unit. So a bigger agency like Coeur d'Alene Police Department, they're a little bit larger, so they can handle their own homicide. But the other five counties that surround us, they don't have the resources, the skill set, the experience to handle that. So we're typically handling all those death investigations in those small rural areas. And there's actually quite a few. It's kind of shocking and scary.
Yeah. Do you guys wear uniforms or plain clothes?
Plain clothes. We're all plain clothes.
Yeah. It's a little bit, I don't know. I didn't mind wearing a uniform because I didn't have to decide what I was going to wear to work every day. Yeah. But it is different. It's kind of nice to get out of the uniform for a while.
Well, that belt, all that weight on your back. I mean, I go to work a patrol shift now and I put that stuff on and I'm like, holy cow, how did I wear this stuff for so long?
You got to get used to that gun digging in your side.
Yeah.
Every time you stand up, it pulls your pants down. And those belt keepers help. Yeah, yeah. You're always going and hiking your britches back up. That's probably too much information there, wasn't it? So you mentioned an incident that happened that resulted in you going back to the I think you told me taking a demotion. Mm-hmm. You were what, a sergeant at the time?
I was, yeah.
Do you feel comfortable talking about that and tell us what happened?
Yeah. So, 2022, I think it was early 2022. I was on patrol. I actually had one of our new dispatchers doing an area orientation. He was riding with me and a call came out of a pedestrian being accident in an alleyway in downtown Coeur d'Alene. So I started responding. We get closer to the scene and the ambulance is pulling away. And I remember looking at this kid that was sitting next to me and I'm like, well, that's either really good or really bad. Cause the ambulance didn't have any lights or any sirens on. It was just, either there was no injuries or it was a death. So I pulled up into the alleyway. There was already two local police officers there. I get out of my car. I tell the kid, stay in the car. Let me go see what's going on. And I get up to the scene and it's a SUV pulling a U-Haul trailer that's full of dirt. And I remember looking at the two officers that were on scene. One of them was just, they were both white as a ghost. And one was just standing there in shock. And the other one was a female sergeant who I knew well because her wife was actually on my patrol team. So, and I remember she's white as a ghost, but she's doing her best. She's a fairly new sergeant. She's trying to take control of the scene. And I make my way around the trailer and then I see a 4-year-old boy laying on the ground. And that's nothing new. I mean, I've been to hundreds of fatal crashes. Mm-hmm. You know, as an officer, you see death day in and day out.
Right.
And so seeing a body is really never, or at least at the time, I didn't think it was bothering me. But I made my way. I see that boy and there's a male on his knees screaming and crying. And I can hear in a house behind me, a female screaming and crying. And this guy on his knees next to the body of this kid, I'm thinking is got to be the father of this kid. And there's a male, adult male, standing above this guy on his knees. And he's consoling him, rubbing his shoulders, telling him everything's going to be okay. And I figured out pretty quickly that the guy on his knees crying was the guy that ran over the kid. And the guy consoling him was the father. And my mind just, you know, I've learned this now, but my mind was not prepared to see that kind of grace in that situation. I couldn't fathom being the kind of man that just lost his kid and then to console the guy that just killed my kid. I still can't. I mean, I would not. Mm-hmm. So immediately, without even knowing it, my body's and my brain's going through these, these stressors and this trauma. I remember I was pretty thoughtful as a sergeant, so I was always trying to think ahead. And I remember once I got on scene, I, because everybody's en route, right? And I cancel everybody, and then I'd send me one trooper that doesn't have kids. And so I got that one trooper there. We started working our way through the scene. Shortly later, and I never have this happen either before, a priest shows up, does last rites right there in the alleyway. So you've got all these emotions going on and we work our way through the scene. We get it investigated. We get people start dispersing and then it's just me there and the tow truck shows up to get the vehicle and the trailer and moves the vehicle. And I look down at the alleyway and there's a huge blood stain on the alleyway. And I'm like, I can't leave this here. So I grab a shovel and it felt like I was out there an hour and I'm just pounding this compacted alleyway. It's like banging into pavement pretty much. It was so hard, but I did everything I could to make sure that was all cleaned up. got it cleaned up. In fact, I was loading all that bloody dirt into a body bag. And once I was done cleaning that up, I threw the body bag in the trailer. And then I told a troop to go collect it at the tow yard. But I wasn't mentally prepared for that situation. What it did to me next is my life just started spiraling. I the nightmares wouldn't stop. So every incident I had encountered my whole career, I was having nightmares all night long. The only difference was is I'd show up to the scene in my nightmare, and instead of everything was the same except the faces on those bodies were of my family, every one of them. So my kids, my wife, and it was just nonstop. I mean, it was all night long. And at the time, I didn't realize our tanks are only so big. And that one incident overfilled my tank. I started drinking a lot without even realizing it. In fact, I'd be down here. I'm sure some people got some soap that's all messed up because I was sipping on the bottle down here. But for about 6 months, I was using alcohol to kind of cope with, just to help me sleep. It never really helped completely, but it would just kind of drown out some of the stuff. And if, as a sergeant, I'm pretty self-conscious, so I can see what's going on. I knew I was starting to fall. I was still a great sergeant. I was still better than most, I would like to think, but I wasn't what I was prior to the incident. About that time during all this, my wife got pregnant. We're both 40 years old. I mean, life's just taking these crazy turns. And at the end of that 6 months to a year, I started contemplating, started making plans to end this, you know, and I don't know where it came from or why I would even think that way, but you get to the point where you just think it's not worth living anymore. And those thoughts just hundreds of times a day, just going through my mind and getting prepared, getting my family prepared for life without me. And I remember sitting in my office one day, and I mean, I'm thankful that I was the leader I was, because I don't think I'd be here today if I wasn't, because I wouldn't have the trust of my people. Remember, I mentioned that sergeant that was at the scene, her wife, who was on my team, came in and sat me down. And she trusted me enough and was comfortable enough to tell me, "Sarge, something's wrong with you. You need to get help. And I know that there's this, here's some things that I know have helped other people." And I made a phone call. Our local foundation, kind of like the gala event you went to, we have something similar to that. It was no questions asked. I said, "Hey, I need help." And the next thing I know, I was in treatment. And it was a game changer for me. And I'm thankful that that troop saved my life. And I'm here today. I still struggle. I'm still dealing with stuff. I'll never be the same. But I'm back on track. I'm back where I need to be. And it's just any law enforcement or anybody that's suffering from trauma out there, get some help. It's tough. It's embarrassing. It can feel embarrassing, but have some courage. Get that help. Reach out. There's a lot of people that want to help you. A lot of people that love first responders and give a lot of money to some of these programs, but make that call, get the help, and you'll be way better off for it, because you deserve to have a good life. You've served the people.
Absolutely.
But yeah, that's kind of that's the story of why I took that demotion. I had to make some life changes and focus on me for once, focus on my family. And that was the best opportunity to do that. And so I took that opportunity, and here I am today.
That's a very moving story, and I know telling these kind of stories is not easy.
Right.
So thank you very much for sharing that. The transparency just brings the realism right to the surface.
Right.
And that's what Klitsch just said here. For law enforcement, for first responders, for military, for anybody that's in an occupation where you see things that, I don't know, maybe people aren't really supposed to see, especially involving gruesome death and just things that are shocking to the normal person. If you need help, like you said, don't hesitate. You know, there's almost every agency, insurance company, they have help clinics that they'll pay for. So if cost is a concern, you don't have to worry about that. If you don't know where to turn, get a hold of me here on Game of Crimes podcast. I'll introduce you to some folks. I've had a lot of people come on here, especially law enforcement, talk about PTSD that they've gone through. A lot of you heard my story in 89. You haven't heard this, Klitsch, but in 89, we got in a shootout in Miami in Hialeah. And my partner got hit twice. He survived, got two 45 caliber slugs in his right arm. And the informant caught a 357 round in the throat. And he didn't make it. We life flighted him out, but he never made it to the hospital. And at that time, I'd been a cop since 75. Some of the older guys are coming around and going, Murph, did you go to counseling? Yeah, I'm going to go. I never went. To the day I retired from DEA in 2013, I had dreams, not nightmares, but I had dreams about Kevin's shooting. That was my partner, Kevin Stevens. And when I retired, they've stopped. I haven't had it since I retired in 13. I was involved in a lot of shootings in 38 years. None of them ever bothered me except Kevin's. And I thought I'm tough enough to handle it, but you're not.
No.
Even if you are, what the heck? It's the agency's going to take care of you. Your insurance is going to take care of you. Go talk to somebody. I mean, you remember old school. We used to go in the bar and we'd talk to each other in a bar and drink it out. And that was kind of our unofficial counseling back then. But how stupid of me to not take advantage of that. It's just ridiculous. Did my family suffer from it? Probably, because I'm sure I was grumpy for a while. And if you ask them now, I'm grumpy all the damn time. But what do they know, right? Just trying to put a little humor on the end of that, because it is a real thing. You see the military, they're averaging 22 suicides a day, which is just totally unacceptable in our country. Anywhere it's unacceptable.
Right.
We're seeing more and more police suicides than we ever have before. Gosh, I just can't stress enough. I don't want to keep beating a dead horse, but I can't stress enough how important it is that you get the help. If we can help you here on Game Crimes, get a hold of me. I mean, you can contact me through our website. Or I tell you what, my email is gameofcrimespodcast@gmail.com. Email me. Your life's a whole lot more important than anything else I'm doing here on the show, other than bringing studs on here to tell their story. So you don't go it alone. Whatever you do, don't go it alone. Just don't.
100%.
Man, it's those old stories. It brings back memories, and they're not all good.
No. No, they're not.
Well, let's lighten it up a little bit and talk about this video you sent me where you say it's not a pit maneuver. I say it started as a pit maneuver and then it got kind of aggressive. But then you sent me just a clip, and my wife, I'm in there going, oh my God. My wife's like, what is wrong with you? And then she's like, oh my God. But then you sent me the whole video, that 30-minute video. So tell us what was going on that day.
So it was during COVID, and if you were an interdiction cop during COVID, it was like heaven on earth, because most people on the interstate were trafficking drugs. The traffic was just so minimal. There was hardly anybody moving. And if you were a criminal, you stuck out big time. And we were sitting out there with my captain, and I never liked stopping cars that were kind of junky. I just never... You know, I always tried to go off of behavior, but I was looking for large loads of dope. I mean, or human crimes, or I was looking for serious stuff. So I tried to stay away from those type of vehicles. And this car drives by, gives all the behavior, and the captain's like, hey, what's wrong with that car? I'm like, well, it's kind of a piece of crap. And when you see the behavior, you know, there's some sort of crime, right? I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And, anyway, I'm like, okay, I'll go stop it. So I get it stopped, and it was a couple meth traffickers. They had not a huge amount of meth, but a trafficking amount. And so I'm dealing with that situation, and the captain shows up to back me up, and he's hauling the female to jail for me. And I got a tow truck coming, and I've got the male in custody. And on the radio, there comes out a call of a carjacking where a guy pulled up, hit a guy over the head with a pistol, and stole this SUV and trailer. And I'm thinking, this can't be real. I mean, in Coeur d'Alene, a carjacking, come on. And anyway, about 30 minutes later, same suspect vehicle pulls up to a house, pulls up, shoots two guys, kills one instantly. And the next thing I hear is they're heading towards my location, which I was in a rural area out east of town on the interstate. And
you still got the tweaker with you.
Yeah, he's sitting in the back seat. In fact, he's hearing all this on the radio.
Oh,
and cause I'm starting to make plans because the guy's behavior was so erratic that I'm thinking, if he sees me on the side of the road, he's going to stop and engage me, right? And the guy in the back seat's like, do I get to go with you? I'm like, no. I mean, so the whole video is comical. So he thinks he's going to get to go with me on this chase. And I remember being so concerned about everybody's safety. The tow truck operators there, that right before the vehicle gets to the murder suspect gets to my location, I get my suspect out and I don't even have time to take the handcuffs off. And I hide him underneath the tow truck and I get the tow truck driver hidden as well, thinking I'm going to be about to be engaged. And luckily the suspect vehicle drives right by me and I take the handcuffs off the guy and his car is actually on the tow truck already. And he goes, "Well, can I take my car?" I'm like, "Hell no, you can't take your car. I just arrested you." He was DUI too. I'm like, I'm arguing with this guy on the side of the road. Anyway, I tell the tow truck driver, I said, "Get him and get out of here." And they get out of there and the vehicle goes and does a U-turn on the interstate through a passover. Anyway, it lines up. The other trooper finds it. And then I get right behind and we're chasing that roadway. I don't know if you can tell in the video, but it's a curvy mountainous.
Right along the water.
Yeah, yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's the last place you want to be in a pursuit. And the trooper I'm with, him and I have been in quite a few pursuits together, and he's just a stud. He's senior. He's experienced. He makes good decisions. So I have full confidence and trust in him. And I remember the guys still make fun of me to this day because he's asking for permission to pit this vehicle. We're doing 100 miles an hour on some of these straight stretches. And I'm thinking in my mind, I'm like, man, if you pit him, you're going to kill him, and you're probably going to kill yourself too at those speeds. And finally, he asked me again, permission to pit. Well, at that time in our policy, or at least how I viewed it, to pit at high speeds, you needed a sergeant's approval, right? Mm-hmm. But it's also deadly force to pit over a certain speed at that time. So I authorized the pit, which is basically authorizing deadly force. And guys make fun of me because I'm like, I'm authorizing deadly force. And they're like, you can't authorize deadly force for somebody else. And so everybody makes fun of me. But by me making that decision, I'm letting him know that
I got your back.
I'm authorizing it. Anyway, he's not able to get that pit in some of those high-speed areas. And we keep going. And, man, we get to a curve. And this troop just goes up and does a beautiful pit right on a curve, gets him pitted. Now, I know the guy's got a gun, and normally I would come in and block him so he can't get out of that pit. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, well, I'm not going to pull up with my windshield next to his driver door window and get shot at 5 feet. That's just stupid.
Yep.
And next thing I know, I start hearing gunshots. I don't know what the hell's going on. And I didn't know what had happened until the very end. I just knew. So, and the suspect takes off again, and I get up to that trooper, make sure he's okay. And he's like, I'm good. Go, 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 go. And I catch up to the suspect. And at this point, if he got past us, he was a free man. There's no law enforcement south of us. He's a goner. Right. And his behavior led us to think he was going to go kill again for sure. And I had two choices. It was pull up alongside him and shoot him or crash him out. And in that brief amount of time, there's not very much time there. And going back to that topic you brought up earlier, in my mind, I'm like, I can't, even though I can justify it, I ain't pulling alongside this guy and shooting him. I'm just not doing it.
Right.
Even though I can, I'm just not going to do it. And I remember saying a prayer, God, take care of my family, because we're doing about 50 miles an hour. And I knew I was going to get injured, and I thought I might get shot too. You just don't know. Anyway, I just said, told myself he's not going to make it around the next corner. I'm ending this. And I put my mind to it and I went up and I crashed him out. And it's a pretty chaotic, I didn't know a Ford Explorer could roll like that, but he actually gets ejected. If you watch the video, he's ejected. And when he finally pops up, he's stuck between my bumper and his car, and his hands just come right up on the hood. And I'm injured. I'd hurt my back pretty good. And I don't think I hurt my back from the crash. I think it was because my fat ass trying to get out of the car so fast, I tweaked something getting out.
That's usually the way it is.
Yeah, and then there's a bunch of potty language and a bunch of yelling and screaming, and we eventually get him into custody and off to jail, and he ends up pleading guilty. Part of his plea deal was he had to go out and because we didn't find a gun. But right after that trooper had I learned that trooper, he's super smart. At the time, it was against policy, but he's like, he shot the tires out on that vehicle. And so super smart, which slowed him down significantly. But right after he shot those tires off and went around the next corner, he threw the gun out the window. He knew we weren't messing around anymore. So part of his plea deal, he had to take us back out there and show us where he threw the gun. And we ended up locating the gun. And
wow.
Yeah. So, but yeah, in fact, I got the hood of my patrol car from that incident. You can't see it, but it's right here on the ceiling above me.
I love it. Yeah. That's great. Holy cow. Is there anywhere people can see? Is that on YouTube?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. I think if you just search in YouTube, Idaho State Police Chase, it's one of the top. It's got like 2 million views. In fact, if I'd have known that video was coming out and I was smart about it, I would have done some paid advertisement with my company. But yeah.
Yep. I got to tell you, folks, if you get a chance, go watch that, because he pits him. And typically when you, especially, so the car that's going to get pitted is usually in a turn, and the police car will bump that rear corner and it'll cause him to spin. Well, this one, when he spun, he went sideways and Glitch hits the gas and rolls him over. I'm like, you look like a bulldozer. Bam.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't going to make it to the next corner. I tell you that.
That stopped the chase. You know, when you took a murderer off the street there, it's excellent that we can sit here and laugh about it now. But you're right. If you guys had crashed out, who would have stopped you?
Yeah, no.
How many more people would have died?
Yeah, it's it.
Hey, I love it though. I just love that video.
Yeah, I love it. I love a good pursuit. That's for sure.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Let me see where we are on time. Yeah, we're good. So I want to ask you about another serious case where you made a traffic stop in 2019 and it involved a 2-year-old little boy. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So, I was a sergeant then, and we had just got some kids from the academy, and it was their first day on the job. So like it was their first day in a patrol car. And on that first couple of days, you ride along with your trainer. Well, his trainer had called in sick, so he got stuck with me for the day. So we leave the office. Now, this kid's got blue flames coming out of his ass because he just graduated and he wants to go out and conquer the world, right?
And we all do.
Yeah. So I think somebody, I'm on my way to the interstate. I'm going to show this kid a good time, get him into something. I'm on my way to the interstate and somebody does something stupid in front of me. I stop that car, kick him loose. And then I get out to my honey hole where I like to sit and do interdiction. And so we're sitting there for a couple hours and this kid's getting antsy in the seat. And we going to do something here? And I'm doing sergeant stuff. I'm on the phone, but I'm watching what's going on. I'm waiting for that right car. In fact, I was on the phone with another interdiction guy at the time, and this van drives by and gives me all kinds of behavior. And I know I got a meth trafficker just based on some of the things he's doing. And the vehicle, I thought it was empty. I thought it was just this male driver in the van. So we get out, we pull alongside the van, and I'm showing this new trooper everything I'm seeing. I'm like, you see this behavior, you see what he's doing here. And I tell him, I said, this guy's going to have trafficking amounts of meth. I can guarantee it. And those years of experience, you just kind of learn what you're seeing. And anyway, we get it stopped, go up there, and it was completely not what I was expecting to see in the vehicle. Get up there, and there's a female, adult female, sitting behind the driver, and she's been severely beaten. Her face is swollen. I mean, she's in bad shape. And then next to her is a baby in a car seat, completely healthy. He's naked, wearing a diaper. And then I can kind of see in the back seat of a van is what appears to be a child laying on the seat, not restrained or anything, and covered with a blanket. So we start working through this traffic stop, and they're doing some shady things, and there's a gun in the car. So we start getting people secure, get the driver secure, get the female out, trying to figure out what's going on. And I finally make my way to that kid in the very back, and I remember getting to him and really seeing that something's seriously wrong here. And I tickle his chin or his forehead, And he looks up at me, and half of his face is paralyzed. So only one side of his face is working. And I said, "Everything's going to be all right, buddy." And he smiled at me and went unconscious. And we get the medical team out there, and we were in a really rural area, and it was foggy and stormy, so we couldn't life flight him. So we get him to this local hospital. It's just a small rural hospital, and he's still unconscious. And that's when I get to see his body, and he is covered from head to toe with cuts and bruises, which we later learned was from an iPhone cord. He'd been beaten with an iPhone cord. So at the time, we didn't really realize what was going on with the driver, but the driver was actually the biological father to the kid that was beaten. And he had made a trip from North Dakota out to Seattle to rescue his kid and his ex-girlfriend. But he also had a gun, and he also had trafficking amounts of meth, and he was making bad choices. He should have just driven the kid to the hospital.
Right.
Anyway, the doctors didn't think he was going to make it at that hospital. So we loaded him in an ambulance and then gave him an escort over to Spokane. He gets into Spokane, and we work our way through the case, get everybody in custody, kind of figure out what's going on. We take the other kid into child protective custody. And that evening, my captain, lieutenant, and I, we show up to the hospital in Spokane to check on the kid, not really knowing how bad it was. And we're making our way through the hospital, and there's kind of an aquarium setting in this hospital. And the lieutenant, who had lost his little boy to cancer several years prior, he makes the comment of, you know, "This is where I spent a lot of time with my kid, was walking through here and in this hospital." And then we get to the lobby of the child intensive care unit, and there's a family that's just screaming and crying. And their little baby had just drowned in a toilet. So, I mean, we're already on edge. Anyway, they let us back in, and we get back to his room, and the nurse is crying. And she says he's not going to make it through the night. We're all heartbroken. We're all crying. We don't know what else to do. The lieutenant, we say a prayer over him. The lieutenant says a prayer over him, gives him the prayer, and we leave. We go get coffee, and we're sitting there for probably an hour just staring at each other. We don't even know what to say. Anyway, the next day we had a bunch of doctors and specialists and detectives from Seattle coming in. So we showed up the next morning. Everybody's chipper, happy. We're like, "What the hell's going on here?" And nurse comes out, and doc, and they're like, "Hey, he's made a complete turnaround. He's probably going to make it now. He's paralyzed. The left side of his body is paralyzed, but we think he's going to pull through." And so we go to this meeting, and we learn that the detectives in Seattle had hit the house where this kid had been beaten. And we learned that he'd been living in a dog kennel. So the kid had been just horrendous living conditions. But anyway, we spent a lot of time. We call him Baby J. His actual real name is Justice, which is kind of fitting but he was in the hospital by himself for a couple months. We try and go over there at least once a day and take care of him. He got into a foster care. My wife and I explored adopting him, but the problem was the criminal case in Washington, it took about 5 years maybe not quite five, 3 or 4 years. And I couldn't move forward with that, knowing I had this criminal case against his parents. That's the Baby J story. We get to see him once or twice a year now. He's gotten his left side starting to come back. He's a cute little kid.
Good.
But so that's the Baby J story. And that trooper that was riding with me that day, his name's Enrique, but that set him on a path that he became a he's an excellent cop, an excellent criminal interdiction. But can you imagine your first day experiencing something like that? I mean, it's just crazy.
No. My first day, I hoped we'd get in pursuit, and we didn't. But that's pretty severe.
Yeah.
That's a real indoctrination, first day on the job.
Yeah.
Wow. And please tell us that the kid's dad is doing the rest of his life in prison.
So the guy that did the abuse was the boyfriend to mom.
Not even the father.
he wasn't the father to the kid in the back. That's why he was abusing him. But he was, at the time, we thought he was the father to the kid that was healthy in the car, right? Which is why he hadn't been abused. We later find out that the driver was the father to both kids through all the... So thank God that that other guy didn't know that, or both kids would have been traumatized in that condition. But yeah, I don't know what he ended up getting for a sentence, but it was significant. She ended up getting, she had another kid in jail. Yeah, just crazy. But the good thing is she'll never get those kids back ever again. So
yeah. Thank God baby Jay's all right.
Yeah. No,
I mean, those are career moments that just like, made all this years of the PT and, you know, the harassment going through the academy and everything that you go through worth it.
100%.
Whew. And then there's one more I want to ask you about that I was just reading about. And I've got a feeling this case still hasn't been adjudicated, but it involves four murders in Kellogg, Idaho in June of 23. I think you weren't the responding trooper, but you were probably the first detective there. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I was one of the first detectives. And then I was a case agent on the murder.
And the question that's coming to light here, everybody, is, and this is what got my attention because I thought this would be a good learning moment for our listeners, is the guy made a spontaneous statement to the first trooper that he committed these murders. Of course, that changed. That trooper didn't realize he was the shooter until he made that statement. And now his mindset switches from trying to help a victim to, hey, I've got to address this murderer.
Right.
And somewhere along the line, he didn't read him his rights. Well, if he didn't ask any questions, there's not an issue.
Right.
But then you come in. You take the guy into a setting where you can talk to him. We've had other guys in here talk about interview and interrogation, and you try to develop a rapport with these people, even when they're the scum of the earth, because you want to get them to tell their story. And I guess you asked a question or said something and then read him his rights. But now his attorney, these dirtbag attorneys who operate with smoke and mirrors and try to throw all the suspicion on law enforcement rather than the criminals, is saying that the guy was not properly Mirandized. So I might have just told your whole story. I didn't mean to do that.
No, you're good.
tell us a little bit about that, because I'm getting it out of the paper, so you don't know if it's true or not.
Yeah, so when I showed up, obviously I hadn't even been to the crime scene. I didn't know hardly anything that was going on other than four people were dead, and we got a suspect in custody. And so when I initially sat down with him, I was just trying to tell him a little bit about me and the little bit of information I did have, I could relate to one of the motivating causes to this murder. And I wasn't trying to get him to talk to me. I was just trying to, hey, this is who I am. I'm Justin. You know, I've got kids. I understand the position you're in. And then I read him his rights. So, I mean, you know, I don't know how many interrogations or interviews you do of somebody where you just walk in and read them rights right away. I mean, you're going to introduce yourself, you know, it's just normal human behavior to do that. So it was really how attorneys are. It was a non-issue, but they turned it into something and they try and make it into something it wasn't, because it clearly wasn't what they tried to make it out to be. That initial deputy that got there, he didn't need to read a Miranda. He wasn't questioning him. You know what I mean? I mean, there's no reason to do that. I mean, he's got other... He hadn't even secured the scene yet. So, yeah, it's just the media will grab onto something, too. And the only people that have to tell the truth in anything are the cops. I mean, the attorneys can make up their own crap. And
yep.
It's just,
make accusations.
Yeah. But it ended up working out. And he got life in prison without parole. So, but yeah, they and you learn. I mean, at that time, I was fairly new to homicide, and you just learn every one of these cases. You're learning something.
Yep. That was as I progressed up in ranks, and I had people working for me. I made a big point of telling my people, when you think you know it all, let me know, because I'm going to transfer you out, or you request a transfer. Because if you're not willing to learn something new, you're going to get yourself hurt or somebody else.
100%.
It's every day is a different day. Yep. So. And I was just real curious about that, because I didn't know about that. I was doing a little research on you and saw that and wanted to know about it. Now, you have founded your own flagship soap company. You've made a couple references to it. I know about it, but the listeners don't. So tell us how that all came about.
So one of my best friends was an Oregon State Trooper canine handler, and he passed away of cancer. And after he passed away, I was really close with him and his family, but he had two young daughters. And they were spraying his cologne on before they go to school every day as kind of a remembrance of their dad.
Oh my goodness.
I was like, I had another friend that had just lost his brother to cancer, and we were talking about, you know, it's got to be all this crap we're putting on our body and eating. And anyway, I was like, I want to find that cologne scent and see if I can put it in some soap. And that's how it got started. And that was about 5 years ago when I started that, the company. And it's, in fact, his soap, I got one right in front of me, but it's an artist rendition of Greg and his canine with some dope on the hood. He was a big interdiction guy, but yeah, the soap's called Dope.
Oh, look.
Yeah, there you go.
Murph's got one.
Yeah.
This is fantastic.
But my wife calls this company a biography of my life. Each, we have about 50 different soaps that we make.
Whoa.
All with its own unique story. It's all service oriented. So first responders, military, veterans. We like to say we're built on service. And in fact, our next big move over the next year is we want to start hiring disabled veterans. We also want to set up a workspace for where a first responder spouse who really they're the ones making most of the sacrifices, but we want to set up some workstations where a spouse who needs to get away, wants to make a little bit of money, can come into the shop for a couple hours, make some soap, get a break from the kids, get their mind straight. Mm-hmm. And so we're really focused on moving towards that, building a company that's continues to serve those who have served. So yeah. And our soap's the best on the market, guaranteed. So
there you go. And I'll be opening it. I just got this soap when I came home from my trip yesterday, had a package there waiting on you. And I got to tell you some of the names. So like, the trooper is just talking about the name of the soap is Dope. Here's one that's named Narc. This one is it unsupervised?
Unsupervised, yep.
Well, here's, I like this one, Foobar. If you don't know what Foobar is, go look it up. Zero Dark 30, that's pretty cool, with the helicopter. And then this might be my favorite, Sheepdog, because that's what we... If you don't know the story about sheepdogs and sheep herders and so forth, law enforcement, we refer to ourselves a lot of times as the sheepdogs, because the public is the sheep and the bad guys are the wolves. And what protects the sheep from the wolves? The sheepdog. So that's where that comes from. But also, you guys have beard butter. I guess it'd be like a beard balm.
Yep.
Which I won't be able to take advantage of that, but I'll make sure somebody with a beard does. And I'm kind of feeling like maybe you talked to my wife before you sent me this box, because he sent me not one, but two containers of deodorant. Are you trying to tell me something here?
We just launched our, all our stuff's natural. So we just launched our natural deodorant. It's been quite a hit. So it's only been out a few weeks. So we're pretty excited about that. It. Yeah.
Well, and you put a card in here, and I guess you put out with every shipment.
Yep.
And here's what I like on the front of that card, unapologetically American. So made America, ladies and gentlemen. Where do you find this at? This is Patriot & Company. You see a shirt, it's flagship Cope company. Here we go. I guess I've been talking too much today. Now, I did some checking on Klitsch here. You can find him on Instagram at Justin Klitsch, and the last name is K-L-I-T-C-H. You can find him on Facebook at Justin Klitsch or Patriot & Company, or you know what? I put in Flagship Soap, and I got you also. You're on LinkedIn as Justin K. And then their website where you can make orders is patriotmen.com, not Patriot Man, Patriot Men. How much of your proceeds, or do any of your proceeds go to any other organizations?
Yeah, so in fact, all of our sales, we give a certain percentage back, and that can look a several different ways. Like the other day, a guy stationed overseas hit me up, said, "Hey, we need some good soap over here. Load up a box of soap, get it overseas to them." We have a veteran artist series. So a lot of these soap companies and a lot of people know the big name, Dr. Squatch. They're getting licenses with like Star Wars and Call of Duty and stuff like that. We want to put those that have served to work. So we hire veteran artists to do all our artwork for our boxes. So our veteran artist series, we have four different veterans that created the art for those boxes. And they each selected a different nonprofit that we give to. We also have one soap, Angry Charlie, where 100% of the sales go to Gold Star families. You know, so this isn't about money to us. This is about making a difference and making, if we can make something better for those who have sacrificed so much, that, I mean, that's really, you know, because life's about experiences, right? Money can help you get some experiences, but if you don't have people and relationships to enjoy all that with, you know, it's really not worth anything, right?
Exactly.
If we can create an experience for somebody that livens their day, and each soapbox, when I started this, it's got a, each soap's got a different Bible verse and a different quote on the inside of the box. So when you lift up the lid, you got a quote to kind of get your day started, and then a Bible verse on the bottom.
Okay. I didn't know that was in there. The first one I opened is, which one? Zero Dark 30. Fight like you're the third monkey trying to get on the Noah's Ark. I love it. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's something small, but I mean, if you can make somebody smile, I mean, or make them have a little better day, it's all worth it, right?
I'm going to sit here and look at all the lids now. And not only did he send me all the soap and the deodorant and the beard treatment, sent me a neat little soap dish. And it's a soap dish, okay? It's plastic. But see, it's got a hole that drains, because the ones in the hotels, they don't drain crap. And you get all that scum and crap down in there. So that was some thought in that. But here's one of the things I think I'm, as much as I appreciate you sending me those, this might be something that I'm proud to possess now. This is an Idaho State Police patch that Klitsch actually wore on duty. I mean, the man's given me one of his keepsakes here. I can't thank you enough for that. That's very personable. I collect challenge coins. I collect patches. And this will go in a place of honor, I promise you.
Awesome.
That's just not one that somebody gave me. That's one that's been worn on duty, yeah. And you gave it to me. So that's very special. So, again, Patriot Men, and just go check it out. See what you think. You've heard me. I've promoted a couple other companies on here. One fellow up in former Marine up in North Carolina has his own business that's doing extremely well, and they produce things like this as well. But check them out, man. See if you like them. Why would you not want to use something that's natural and organic versus something that's synthetic, which means it's made with chemicals, just like drugs, synthetic drugs. You didn't think Murph knew big words like that, did you? Well, somebody else told me that's the only reason I know it. So, Chris, before I let you go, brother, is there any words of advice or wisdom that you have for people, maybe people that are considering a life of law enforcement as their career? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, first, Murph, I want to thank you for your service. I know that narcos can be, maybe it's not all factual or whatever, but a good portion of it is, and you're a badass and a legend, and I don't think I'll ever get sick of watching that show, but I appreciate what you do for all law enforcement. You're continuing to serve even after you've retired by doing this podcast and changing lives and getting that message out there of support. If I had to leave you with one thing in law enforcement, remember two things: love and experience. And that's more of a leadership philosophy of mine, but it applies to every level of law enforcement. And when I say love, you don't have to be friends with your partners. You don't have to like them. You don't have to want to go have a beer with all of them, because that's impossible to like everybody, right? Mm-hmm. But you better damn well love them. And love doesn't mean you have to like them. It means you love them, you care about them personally, professionally, and you put them on a pedestal, because that's really what our profession is missing, is that unwavering love for one another. Because a lot of times we can eat each other up. And like I said, you don't have to like somebody to love them. I mean, we all have family members we can't stand to be around, but we still love them. And that's the same for law enforcement. And the second one's experience. And if you're in a position to provide people with opportunities, those lead to experiences, which lead to experience. So even as a new guy, try and, or a new gal, try and provide opportunities to everybody you come across. And that's even the criminals. This drug problem, you're not going to just arrest somebody and this is going to be over. You're going to have to take steps and provide opportunities for people and provide encouragement. But if you can start your career with thinking about love and experience, you're going to be a phenomenal law enforcement officer. And that'll translate into leadership. It'll translate into catching a lot of bad guys. Those are the most important things you need to think about when you're trying to get into this job. And if you have that mindset and that attitude, you're going to be successful.
Yep. If I can extrapolate on that just a second, Klitsch, you're going to earn respect, not only from the bad guys that you put in jail, but from the public as well. And when you take these jobs, you're a public servant. And as you've heard me say on here 100 times before, some people consider that term public servant as a derogatory term. I don't. No. I think it's a heroic term, because you, these individuals, have chosen to dedicate their lives to help their family man. And there is no higher calling than that. No. So if you want to do something to help your family man, you know, everybody's not cut out to be a cop. I think it's a calling. I think that God gives us all gifts. Mine was to, and Klitsch's as well, was to be able to put up with what you see out there in uniform. And even as you've heard us both just tell you today, there are times when it catches up to you and you need to get help. But thankfully, Klitsch did. He's back out on the road again now, helping others. So give it some serious consideration. I'm not trying to be a recruiter for any specific agency, but law enforcement is a honorable career. Don't listen to the rhetoric that goes on out there. If you want to help other people, this is a place. Just keep in mind, you're going to be helping people that most of the time you don't know. And a lot of them will just as soon see you dead as see you alive. But that's part of being a public service. Klitsch, I can't tell you how honored I am to have had you on here. I've got to call Zach and thank him for introducing us. Man, from the very first time that we swapped text messages or an email, whichever it was like brothers, and that's part of the brotherhood of law enforcement. You sent me those videos and some pictures and had me falling out of my chair laughing. And today, especially, I laugh a lot on this show, but not many times I have to dry tears out of my eyes. That's just hilarious, some of the shows you've had. But ladies and gentlemen, please show Klitsch here and his people some love by going to their website, patriotmen.com. Check it out. Try it out. Just see if you like it. And if you don't like it, then don't buy it, okay? But at least give it a try. So I don't want to say one more time to you guys as well. Thank you very much for coming back every week to support me. If you're listening to this and you haven't checked it out on YouTube, please go over there now. Just type in, go in the search bar, type in Game of Crimes Podcast. Do me a favor, click on the subscribe button, the like button, download some videos, leave me some comments. I'd love to hear from you. If it's an ugly comment, keep it to yourself, but I know you won't, because those kind of people never do. And if you haven't heard, I'm surprised to say this myself, Game of Crimes is now on TikTok. I have a young lady in Columbia that's helping me out, a lady who I will bring here as a guest on the show once she goes through her ordeal, and wait till you hear her story. She's associated with Tyler Schwab from Libertas International, who rescues human trafficking victims. She's agreed to be on the show, but she's got to get through the judicial process for in her case first. So she's working on that. She's blowing TikTok up for me. She has blown Instagram up, Game of Crimes on Instagram, to where I think the post she put out the other day got 157,000 views and over 10,000 likes. Before her, if I got 100 likes, that was a lot. So love everything she's doing. But this thing is growing. There may be some surprise announcements coming. I mentioned it to Klitsch, but according to secrecy, you never know where Game of Crimes is going to go next. But you know you got to keep coming back every week, right? And that's because where else are you going to play the biggest, baddest, most dangerous game of all? And we're talking about the Game of Crimes. I'll see you folks next week. God bless. Thanks, Klitsch.